Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Our customers don't come to us because everything's working, right? They're not like, I'm so happy today. I have the body of my dreams. Let me give you $250 for supplements and a 90-day workout program. That's not what's happening, right? They're like, my life isn't working. Things aren't here. I've tried this before. It's never worked. Like getting, like you said, getting really connected to who they are and what their wants and needs are so that we can meet them where they are and take them where they need to go. But in that is where you realize that the value of what you offer has never been in your offer or the product. It's in the accountability of helping people prove that story wrong or negating that pain point or getting them one step closer to their destination. And that's gold, man. That's what this game is about.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust, too, that you enjoyed my recent conversations with Steph Clark of Steph's Business Bookshelf and Jason Resnick, freelancer, freelance coach, and mentor. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, George Bryant. George is so many things that he's hard to describe with a typical bio. He's the New York Times best-selling author of Paleo Kitchen. He's created a number 4 app in the world, Caveman Feast. He's an online powerhouse. And yet he calls these superficial achievements. His most important achievements are his own pivots, which led him to thriving as a loving father, a husband, and a person committed to many things, and among others, to making marketing human again, something very close to my heart. Now, he helps people and organizations put the heart back into their business. He helps them connect with what it means to be in business and how to carry their ethos and vision into the business so that everyone they touch get that they matter in every step of the journey. A quick promotional message from our sponsor. Now that's me, or more accurately, my business, InnovaBiz. We help coaches and consultants build their professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal client. The result is that their ideal clients are virtually banging their door down and lining up to work with them. To help you get clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can build that strong, enduring relationship with them, take a look at our Marketing Master mini class. In less than 30 minutes, you'll be able to get absolute clarity on who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketing master. It is completely free. It's my gift to you as my listener, and it's also accessible without even giving away your email. In today's discussion, George talked to me about the mindset of success and overcoming our fears and proving our story that we tell ourselves is actually wrong and working to improve yourself first. We talked about marketing as a lifelong human journey and relationship. It really doesn't have an end point. And George described how you can increase conversions by 65 percentage points with human-focused cart abandonment emails and engagement. So without further ado, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from George Bryant. Hi,
Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Temecula, I think it's pronounced, near San Diego, California, George Bryant. Now, George describes himself as Chief Heart Marketing Officer, and his mission is to ensure that businesses understand that relationships always beat algorithms in marketing.
Yeah.
So, George, welcome to the podcast. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Super stoked to be here. Yeah, it's Temecula, California. So, Southern California Temecula. Wine country. But yeah, I'm really excited to be here. As we were talking before the recording, I was like, I can't wait to dive into the topic when somebody who understands it gets it.
Great. Now, Steve August, who is our guest on episode 197 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we get you on the show and have a chat. So, a big hello to Steve.
Hey, Steve, how's it going? Steve is one of my mastermind students who I just absolutely adore dearly. He is so amazing. So I hope that episode was amazing.
It was. It definitely was.
And if it wasn't, we won't tell him. So, Steve, if you're listening, we think it was amazing.
Great. Now, George, you're a self-taught chef. You're a New York Times bestseller, author of The Paleo Kitchen. You're creator of the Civilized Caveman Cooking Creations. That's a bit of a mouthful.
That was a big business mistake.
You've built $2 billion businesses, and today you help businesses outperform by leveraging organic customer relationships, which we're going to talk a lot more about today. You help them connect with what it means to be in business, which I really like that, you know, that's your focus, and you help them carry their ethos and vision into the business so everyone they touch gets to know that they really matter in every step of the journey. So that's really wonderful. So as someone whose mission is to make marketing more human, again, I'm really looking forward to digging more into that. Now, before we get on to that, I want to ask a slightly different question about your background, because what I'll do is post some links to a couple of podcast episodes you did with other people where you talk quite a bit about your background and people can listen to into that. So I'll just say that you've had a very difficult upbringing that included abuse, and you've had some very traumatic experience during and after your service in the military.
Yep.
Now, you've overcome all of those to become an incredibly successful and an incredibly positive person. So what interests me is, what's the mindset? What are the beliefs and behaviors that you kind of brought into the world and that you practice to have dealt with all those things, overcome them to get to where you are today?
Yeah, that's an amazing question. Probably that is actually the best question I've ever been asked on a podcast. And this will be upwards of 2,000 interviews that I've done. Best one I've ever had asked. So yeah, like you were saying, and I think just to give context, we're going to reference a lot. So if you Google my name, you'll find a lot of food stuff, cooking stuff. I taught myself to become a chef, not a chef. I taught myself how to cook so I could beat bulimia. And there's about 1,000 podcast episodes where me talk about overcoming bulimia and teaching myself how to cook and how I launched that business as well, being self-taught, which leads very much into where we are today. And so the question of like, what do I do or what do I have when I think about the resiliency or my life and where I've ended up here? And I feel like if you asked me this question once a week for 52 weeks, you'd get 52 different answers. But given that I just had an amazing conversation with my wife and my team and my kids, I'm really grounded. And what I'm currently focused on now, and this will give some context. When I wake up in the morning today, like when I woke up this morning, I woke up at 3:55 a.m. to go to the gym at 4 a.m. because I'm a nutso and I like to push myself. And it's really interesting because I got out of bed this morning and I had just as much anxiety, depression, and sadness in my body and in my feelings as I did 3 or 4 years ago when I was suicidal and going into the hospital. The only difference is the choice that I make and the awareness I have of the situation. And so one of the most freeing things that I've experienced in the last couple of years, and I've done a lot of work emotionally, I've done 5 years of EMDR, I've done prolonged exposure, I've gone down to the jungles in Peru and spent many nights with shamans and done a lot of work. And where I am today, the biggest secret to my happiness and my optimism really boils down to the fact that all the results that I've had in my life, whether they were results I created or things that had happened in my life, I've always been 100% responsible for how I react once it's happened and what I do moving forward. And I've always had the power of choice, and every human being has that. And so if I have a limited time on this planet And this is literally, this is about as blunt as it comes. And I'm like, okay, I woke up and I still feel like crap today. Am I either going to feel like crap and be successful, or am I going to feel like crap and create crappy results? And I choose the successful side, and I don't stack the cards against myself. I'm like, what's the easiest win that I can have today? And normally what I find is by the time my keys go in the ignition to get into the car for the gym, the feelings are already gone and I'm excited. I'm proud of myself. I'm ready to go for the day. And I get kind of grounded in that. And multiple times throughout the day, I get hit with triggers, right? Like, I've lost 28 Marines to suicide. Sometimes the phone rings. I witnessed tragedy. Two very big leaders in our space last week, tragically, one is on hospice and one passed away. And those things come in and they trigger me a lot. And so what I like to do is when those things come in and when I get triggered, which is going to happen in business, there's lots of parallels between business and what I'm talking about. What I used to do is I used to then seek external, right? I would be like, something happened. I'd go to somebody. I'd go to my wife. I'd go to my friends. I'd be like, oh, it's so hard. It's so, I can't believe this happened again, right? And now I do the exact opposite. I go internal and I seclude myself from everybody. And I call it my intestinal fortitude cave. And I basically remove myself from all the distractions. Sometimes it's an ice bath. Sometimes I get in my sauna. Sometimes I go for a hike, or sometimes I just go outside and sit in silence. And I really allow myself to fully feel and experience whatever those feelings are. And I mean, like, I'm asking myself, like, I'm like, oh, my life is so hard. I'm like, well, where else does that show up in your life? And I'm like, where's that come from? And I was like, why does it feel like that? And then I'm like, why does it feel the same to almost get in a car accident as it does to go on a roller coaster, but yet I make the roller coaster fun and the car accident bad? And I like have these, I just give myself, for me, what I think the secret is, I allow myself, or I give myself the space to be and not try to change it, not try to be like, you shouldn't feel that way, or that feeling is wrong, or don't say anything, just push it down. I allow myself to fully feel and also fully explore whatever those feelings are. And what I have found now after doing this for a couple of years, that the gap between like, oh, I'm triggered and life is so hard, and me getting into action is about 30 seconds, whereas it used to be like 30 days of like this like tedious, monotonous, like, oh, it's so hard. Everything's stacked up against me. Like, it's not going to work. And now it's like, oh, that didn't feel good. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, I feel better now. Oh, I'm going to go do something differently now. And so for me, I get to practice this every day because I consult for a living. I own 7 companies. I run a mastermind, and I'm with business and entrepreneurs every single day. And this is the stuff that happens every day, right? Like, my business is failing. My ad account got shut down. I got a cease and desist today. My Amazon account got shut off, and I'm 150 grand a month out. And I get to practice this over and over and over and over. And like, people are like, oh my God, this happened. I'm like, why did the first thing you do was message me? And they're like, oh crap, I knew it. Hold on, I'll call you in an hour. And then they like dive back in and they're like, this is what I noticed. And I was like, yeah. And so for me, Wim Hof calls this, Scott Carney calls this, there's a book called What Doesn't Kill Us Make Us Stronger by Scott Carney. It's kind of what got me into cold therapy. It's what they call the wedge, right? And it's the gap in time between our response, like our subconscious response, based on an element or a trigger in our external environment, right? So good example is if you put your hand on a hot burner, before you even have a conscious thought that it's burning, your body is going to move it off. The wedge is working and training yourself so that if you have a trigger like that, obviously not burning yourself, but you get to the point where you can choose to keep it on, or you can choose to pull it off because you're aware of what's happening. And so that wedge is what I work on every single day. Ice baths, saunas, breath work, meditation. And in years of therapy, and I mean probably 40 prescriptions, I've done retreats, I've done hospitalizations, I've been in psychiatric wards, I've done all of it. Hands down, the two most powerful things that I've done are breath and alone time. Breath and alone time are the two most profound, powerful medications, treatments that I've ever found on the planet. So, you'll learn this about me. I give very long-winded answers to short questions because I talk for a living. But to sum that up, really, I think that the two biggest things that I take away moving forward, that I've had this experience in my life and, you know, 38 years in of some trauma and some experiences, is that I've come to realize that how I feel now is the same as how I felt then, but I'm completely in control of the results that I create. And so I spend a lot of time being present and breathing and being okay with that. Like being okay with the fact that I only got an hour of work done today because that's all my body could produce, and not making myself wrong or being like, well, you're a bad entrepreneur because they say you should hustle every minute of the day. And I was like, I say we should be intentional every minute of the day about whatever we're doing to heal ourselves first, so we can serve our customers, or we can market effectively, or we can, you know, have the impact that we want to have. So thanks for asking me the best question I've been asked.
All right. Well, that's fabulous. And it was a great answer too. And I think, you know, the ability to kind of take stock and assess oneself and one's emotions and feelings, but then also say, now this has happened, it's done, I can't control what's happened, but I can control how I respond to it.
1,000%.
I can choose what I do next. So that is really powerful, I think. And
I learned it in business. I learned it in business, right? Like all these business lessons we teach people every day, all I did was turn them around. And I was like, you know, that works really well if you try it in your personal life too.
All right. So tell us what you do today and why, if you can give us that in a
I'll give the short version. So I'll give you the fastest elevator version ever. So I was in the Marine Corps, active duty Marine in the United States for 12 years, 3 combat deployments. Was planning on doing an entire career, and after 12 years, I got medically separated due to injuries. So almost lost my legs, had a couple concussions and traumatic brain injuries that I'm currently healing because I have physical trauma that still causes some pain and triggers. And so in the transition from Marine to civilian, I needed something to do, and I was bulimic at the time, so I taught myself how to cook. And I was like, if I document this thing every day on like social media, then I'll have accountability. I didn't even know what a blog was. This was 2010. So I was like, oh, you should post all of it on blogger.com. And I was like, what's blogger.com? And I was like, okay, signed up for an account, launched a blog, very immaturely named it Civilized Caveman Cooking Creations. And over 8 years, it got chopped down just to Civilized Caveman because that was a really bad name in the beginning. Just Civilized Caveman, and went on to become a food blogger. And I self-taught everything: digital marketing, affiliate marketing, email, social media, paid marketing, content marketing, all of it. Ended up launching an ebook in 2011, 2012, grossed over $1 million in the first couple of months with a Word document, which was like my yearly salary came the first day, and that was a shock to me. Then I lost all of that because that's what you do as an entrepreneur, and then recovered back up. And I was like, I'm going to launch an app. I figured out how to launch an app, and I launched an app called Caveman Feast, hit number one in the world, got featured by Apple as the top health app of 2015. In that same time, I launched a book, did the marketing plan myself, hit number 4 in the New York Times, and did 22 weeks on the New York Times list. And so this was all great. Like on paper, my life was amazing. Except I hate cooking, and it wasn't what I wanted to do in my life, and it felt like a chore every single day. And the only part I liked of it was seeing people's lives transform on the other side of my recipes, like creating a recipe and losing weight, or sticking to a diet and completing the results. And then after time, I realized that it wasn't the food that I was chasing. It was the ability to serve other people. But the only thing that was missing is it was incongruent for me, because I didn't want to cook. I didn't want to be a food blogger. I didn't want to be an influencer, right? Like I didn't want the social media followers I had. Temporarily, it felt great, you know, to have 1 million people a day be like, you're so amazing. And then you feel empty on the inside. It wasn't the life that I wanted to live. And so I got struggled and torn for a couple of years. About 3 years, I ran that company as like the face of that company while I was resenting it. And behind the scenes, I had started secretly consulting. And I had started consulting companies on how to ethically scale their company by teaching them that relationships beat algorithms. And my first ever consulting client was actually Men's Health, of all people. And that led to a very fast meteoric rise as a digital marketing consultant. And in that, I basically ended up building an entirely different world as a digital marketing consultant. And I ended up giving away the caveman business to a friend who was like, I was like, you run this with love. It's all you. Have fun. Here's 1 million people. Here's 10 years of content. Like, just have it. And, you know, just handed that over. And I shifted my focus full time to what I say, helping companies ethically scale, doing digital marketing consulting, but really all business ops, really, because, you know, nobody has a marketing problem, right? Like, it just newsflash for anybody who thinks you have a marketing problem. There's about 17 layers underneath that. It just depends on how deep they are, right? Sometimes it's easy, but sometimes we get down all the way to the bottom, right? So marketing became my Trojan horse to get into companies. And so for the last 3 years, I've been doing digital marketing consultants. So my clients like Men's Health, Adidas, Titleist, Onnit, Vital Proteins, and the list continues. You can find them all on the internet. And in that, I launched a mastermind and started empowering other entrepreneurs that were kind of in the similar space and started coaching them. And I realized my passion was really digital marketing or people in general, right? So digital marketing became my Trojan horse to talk to people about people and how our marketing is just a reflection of who we are, and the results that we create are based on how congruent we are. And that led to some tremendous results. I was a part of building $2 billion companies that I very naively didn't take part of. I'll never make that mistake again. But lots of success came with that. The impact was amazing. And then over the last couple of years, that's all I've been doing is helping other companies ethically scale while building my own. And in that, I've acquired six companies now. So I have two supplement companies I own. I have a diaper bag company I own. I have a protein bar company I own. I have my mastermind and digital marketing company. And then I own a part of a big information product company in the digital marketing space. And so now I spend all of my days helping anybody who is willing to love their customers a little more scale their business. And I do it through a lot of different modalities, but that gets me to where I am today. So I spend all of my time doing what Mike Michalowicz would call my queen bee role from the book Clockwork, if you haven't read it. Mike's a good guy.
Great book.
Yeah, amazing book. But my queen bee role is being in relationship with people so I can create possibilities in marketing, in business, in philanthropy, in entrepreneurship. And so I literally spend all my days working more than I ever worked before and loving every minute of it. And so that's what gets us to today's podcast episode.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Well, the thing that really strikes me about all of that in terms of, you know, you talked about digital marketing as being your Trojan horse. But to me, when I talk to people and they say, well, digital marketing, you know, it's so hard and it's so different and I don't know. And I said, no, forget about the word digital, just look at marketing. And then let's take marketing back to what is it you're actually doing. So you're building a relationship with somebody that you might be able to help.
Yep.
And you're giving them information that hopefully can help them move forward and help them make a decision whether you've got the solution that they need or not, and whether they like you and trust you and want to do business with you. And I said, that's how you do marketing. And digital is the same. All you're doing is, yes, you've got, you know, maybe you're doing it across the world on a screen using a social media platform or using email, but it still comes back to exactly the same thing. So I really love that you kind of in using the digital marketing to actually.
I tell people all the time, I mean, you nailed it, Jürgen. You nailed it. I tell everybody, I'm like, the mistake that people make with digital marketing is that you look at it like it's its own ecosystem or world. I'm like, it's traditional marketing with a lot more touch points and a lot less time. So your ability to serve at scale is massive. I was like, but if you treat digital marketing like you would a butcher shop in the 1950s where you knew everybody's name and order, whether they bought from you or not, I guarantee your business succeeds. The problem is that we took something that increased our capacity to be in relationship with human beings, and then we removed the relationship part. And then we're like, this isn't working. And I was like, well, I wonder why.
Yeah.
Right? Because for me, marketing, like I define marketing as a two-way value-based long-term relationship. Nowhere in there do I say digital marketing or marketing is a one-night stand, high-end prostitution, transactional. Like nowhere in there are those words. And so I feel like, just like you nailed it, for all of us, the more grounded we can be in like what it is we're actually doing, what our purpose is and why we're doing it, and then who it is that we're meaning to help. And that's the come from and realizing that it's all just a relationship. And on average, it takes 26 touch points to convert a cold customer into buying a $60 product. And you expect your one Facebook ad to work, right? Like we're missing that whole, I don't know, will you go to dinner with me? Would you love a second date? Can I walk you to your front door and give you a hug? Oh, I sent flowers to your desk. Like I'm thinking about you. You know, that whole courting phase that is what makes relationships successful. So that's one of my missions, is to get people to inject in the value of relationship and to give people digitally what we seek in person or off the devices. So it's a very congruent experience. Like, so for me and my employees and my companies, I tell everybody, I say, when you come into my world, my events or my stores or wherever I am, I want you to feel like I want you to make your customers feel. And then when you get to your customers, I want them to feel in person the same way that they do when they get a message from you on Facebook or a comment from you on Instagram or they see an ad. And if that feeling isn't the same, then we're missing something.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great. So when did you... I mean, you talked about reading books and studying things. So was it all self-taught, the whole marketing thing? Yeah.
Yeah. So I've only read 6 books in my adult life. 5 of them were marketing. And they're like the only books I recommend for people when it comes to marketing. And I've shifted the list a little bit. But I had this theory, and this is going to sound trite and silly, but I was basically broke, right? Like I was living below poverty and I couldn't really afford to waste time trying to learn or read or anything. And so I was like, you know what, if I just do this every day and I just keep posting every day and blogging every day, I'll bump my face, I'll hit a couple bumpers, some things won't work, but I'll probably figure out a lot faster what works and what doesn't work than if I sit here thinking about it. And so I basically made a rule that I was only allowed to consume 30 minutes of content a week, and I'd never broken that rule since, and that was 9 years ago. And so whenever I have the need or the thought of like, oh, I wonder what they say, or I wonder what it says in that book, I'm like, well, so you can either consume somebody else's right now, or you can go create original content and serve your purpose. And I literally put it down and I go do a live video, or I go create a training, or I get on a call like this, or I go have a conversation with an entrepreneur to support my Queen Bee role, which is me wanting to help people, you know, grow their lives and businesses. And so it was... like in hindsight, like I probably should have read like 3 or 4 books, would have saved me some headaches, broken noses and black eyes. But I think there was a lot of magic in the being in the mud of it and being in the grit and being like, you know what, like I'm a yes and I'll figure it out as I go. And it gave me a very unique skill set because now I've done everything, like actually run all the platforms, built them all. Now I teach and consult on the theory and execution of it. So I get everybody. And then I was an influencer on top of it. And so I get every aspect of the ecosystem when it comes to a company and digital marketing. And I have a very unique perspective. So it ended up becoming a good thing. And so I tell my students this, I tell my team this, I have this theory that human beings, we get ideas in our brain and 95% of them are the right idea. But we don't execute because we go seek validation first. We go try to find it in a book or consume somebody else's content. And we're basically like, hey, can I get some evidence to know that I had the right answer? And then I'll do it. And I was like, but if we can get rid of that gap between like, I have this idea, now I get validation, closing that gap is where results happen. And so my job is to help people close that gap. And it's like, yeah, no, like I really don't want you consuming my content. I would rather you watch one video on email marketing done correctly and then spend the next 2 years doing nothing but writing email and being in relationship with people. And I guarantee you, your business will succeed because there's no other way that it could happen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's great. Great advice. Taking action. I mean, we all procrastinate from time to time, some more than others. 1,000%. And yeah, and I don't know how many times I've heard the phrase, oh, I thought of that idea years ago. You know, well, how come, you know, this person's mildly successful with it because they've implemented it? You might have thought of it, but you don't have anything to show for it. Yeah.
1,000%. Yeah. It's the visions and the results are created by like getting in and doing the work, right? Like my wife and I have those talks all the time. We'll be at dinner with a glass of wine. She's like, you know that thing? I'm like, dude, that thing was like $500 million. She's like, I thought of that 7 years ago. I'm like, well, you should have told me 7 years ago because we would have just made it work, right? But yeah, it's the hindsight's really beautiful, but it's really motivating to me too, though, because I think about it and I think about that like when it comes to procrastination, right? And it ties into the first question you asked me. It's like really that honesty with myself every moment of the day. As an entrepreneur years ago, I used to make procrastination bad. I was like, oh my God, I'm not doing anything. I should be doing this or doing this, rather than like taking my body's internal clock and being like, why am I so resistant to growing right now? Like what is it telling me? And like then being okay with it, right? Not like I'm going to go read a book or watch a video to get motivated. It's like, no, like I'm going to feel this feeling. Yeah. And normally what I found is that procrastination boils down to my fear of success or my fear of trusting myself, which I made a rule that either way, they're both stupid beliefs and I just can't, I have to ignore them as much as possible. And so, but when I allow myself to explore them, it normally comes with a lot of clarity. And it's like, oh, I think about this. Like, I wonder, I don't know, let me, what are they doing? Or what does their funnel look like? Or what do their emails look like? Or what do their social media look like? I'm like, nope, nope, screw it. What's your idea? And I'm like, this. I'm like, how can I best get it done? I'm like, this. And I like, go do it. And it ends up being cathartic in the process because it's, you know, like my way out. But just newsflash for everybody, I don't have social media. I deleted it when I gave away that company. So I don't know one of my competitors in any of my companies. And I have a rule that none of my students or business partners are allowed to know what they're doing, follow them, see them, or be a part of them. And so we keep that rule across every single thing that I do. And somehow magically, by looking at our world instead of their world, we become successful.
Hmm. And so yeah, well, that's an interesting point because a couple of years ago, I noticed a trend in Facebook in particular where they started doing business groups.
Yep.
And I thought, this is actually really neat. And, you know, it's a way where people can interact in groups, like-minded entrepreneurs, and share experiences. Some of the groups were really good that I was involved in, that, you know, people were asking questions and it was a very giving community and people would share information. But over that 2 years now, I've noticed that there's just so much noise there. Some of those groups are still good, but to find them, it's really hard to get in there. And I've gone right off Facebook again now.
Yeah.
I think you make a really good point. It's just a time sink. And it's one, like talking about procrastination, there's so many things that we can do as distractions that don't actually achieve what we're, or get us progress to achieve what we're setting out to achieve.
It's the hand that feeds us biting us back, right?
Yeah.
Because so many companies that I work with rely on Facebook ads, right? But they have to remember that how Facebook makes their money is by keeping you on the platform as distracted and as long as possible, the endless scroll. I was like, so yes, you're paying them to help reach people's eyeballs. Well, you're wasting 80% of your time consuming it, being their avatar. And I was like, I bet you if we deleted Facebook and stopped you from running Facebook ads, your business would get bigger than it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, because you're basically offsetting the cost of like what it is. And that's not true for everybody, but I think it's definitely something worth noticing, right? It's it's really powerful when we look at, and it's got to, I remember because the first shift to Groove happens after they changed the algorithm from date-based to algorithmically based. And then people started looking for other avenues of ways. And then they did a massive update to the groups about 2.5-3 years ago. And they made them really powerful when it came to business. And I was like, here we go. And like, now you're right. Like every single funnel, every email, every ad, it's like, join my group. And then go in my group and post that you bought my course from my other group. So everybody in this group knows you bought this group. And I was like, come on, guys. Like, let's go. Like our job isn't to get our customers to spend more time consuming our content. Our job is to get our customers to consume as much content as needed for them to go create results in their life and then help them continue to achieve those results.
Hmm. Yeah.
Nowhere in that business or marketing ethos, we're like, you know what? Our job today is to get every one of my customers to watch every single one of my YouTube videos 100% all the way through and then do nothing with what content I gave them. And then we're like, I'm so mad that I only get 20% of my audience to watch my videos. I'm like, or look at it the other way. 80% of the people that you help are in their life, living their life and achieving their goals and probably capitalizing on the 86% of marketing that is word of mouth and a lot more powerful than a YouTube video as they're telling all their friends about how good they look with their stroller in the park on Sunday because they ate your recipe and did your workout.
Yeah, great. Now, you mentioned a few moments ago around procrastination, you know, that we have a fear of failure or a fear of being wrong. But you also talked about the fear of being successful, which is fascinating because I think it's pretty common that people recognize and admit that, you know, we have a fear of being wrong or a fear of failure. And that's often something that holds us back. But talk to me a little bit more about the fear of success, because I think there's a big point in there that I think people aren't necessarily aware of.
Yeah. So the fear of success is deeper than the other two, right? And it's really interesting. It took a lot of personal development work for me to like kind of hear, right? But every human being in growing up, you know, 0 to 7, we develop a paradigm. Somewhere in that paradigm, we form our view of the world, our story of the world, right? And a lot of human beings have the same triggers, right? I'm afraid people are going to leave me. I'm afraid I'm not good enough. You know, I'm unlovable, right? Those are the big primary three, but they mainly all boil down to one of those, right? And so once you can identify which one that is, now we don't ever change those. Like human beings don't change. We elevate our consciousness to choose, right? You just become aware of these things. And I'm like, oh, there it goes again. Like, look at me making scarcity comments again about money. Of course, because I don't think I'm good enough. But it's like, no, we spend our whole life trying to prove that story wrong through our partners, through our businesses, and through everything that we have. And as I've done more and more work, I've realized that I've never had a fear of failure, because where I currently am, if I stay stuck, like if I stay where I am technically failing, because I'm proving my story, right? Like I'm not achieving results. I'm not impacting the world. I'm not being a good husband or a good father. And so I'm making my story right, which in my world is my definition of failure. But the truth is that we're not very actually afraid of being uncomfortable. We get addicted to our discomfort when it comes to the things that bother us, right? I think about the amount of times people are like, God, I can't stand it. Every day I wait in this line for 8 minutes. I'm like, then why do you keep going? Right? And they're like, God, like I never understand. Like I leave at this time and it's always the same. And I'm like, why don't you leave earlier? Right? Like we become ingrained and patterned in that routine based on that story. And so we're really not afraid of failing. What we're really afraid of is throwing an X into that box of O's that challenges our belief system and changing the pattern to create a result, because we're afraid of who we're going to become. Because who we become is what proves that story wrong, right? So when I impact a billion lives and I build 10 charities and I own 20 companies and I've left a legacy that made people feel like they matter regardless of money, my whole story that I'm addicted to holding on to of like, oh, I'm not good enough, you know, I came from nothing, nobody's going to love me, is completely challenged and proved wrong. And it's the dissonance in that that people start to juggle with. And I'm only talking about myself. If this lands, it lands, right? But it's that dissonance that we start to juggle with. And you see this pattern in entrepreneurs' life all the time, right? Think about how many times most entrepreneurs end up bankrupt before they hit it, right? It's like millionaire bankrupt, millionaire bankrupt, millionaire bankrupt, millionaire. It's like 100K bankrupt, 100K bankrupt, billionaire, right? You see this pattern, right? You see it in the business. Like this campaign worked, this one didn't, this one didn't, this one did, this one did, this one didn't. But then a couple years later, they're all working. And what's really happening is we're getting met with that resistance of like, oh, we're succeeding. Wow, my life is working. Like I have the wife of my dreams, the kids of my dreams, the life of my dreams. This is too good. Let me self-sabotage it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we end up... whoosh, because then we get to go back into our comfort zone of proving once again that we can do it over and over the hard way, rather than just accepting that like this gets to be the easy way and having that. So when I say my fear of success, it's I've smashed my head up against that ceiling so many times and fallen backwards. I made a rule that I never get to smash my head against the ceiling anymore, right? I'm like, oh, ceiling's coming. I'm like, hey, babe, here it is. Like I can feel it right now. I'm already self-sabotaging. I don't want to take that meeting. Like, and she's like, okay, cool. Take a couple days off. And I like kind of get regrounded, like what I'm up to and where I'm going. Then I take that meeting and close a big deal and own another company, or, you know, have a massive retail launch and do $3 million in a weekend and break every record that they've ever had, right? Like all of those things. And so underneath it for me is the same thing that's underneath marketing for me and underneath business for me, is that it all stems from us, right? Like what we see in front of us is just a reflection of who we are and how we're showing up. The business we create is a reflection of us, right? And so I tell people this all the time. They're like, God, my employees just never share their feelings. I'm like, when was the last time you shared yours? And they're like, oh, man, I knew I shouldn't have asked you. And they're like, God, like nobody watched that video. I said, would you watch that video? And they're like, no. And I'm like, so why would they?
Yeah.
I'm like, what video would you watch? They're like, well, I would have said this, 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 this. I'm like, great, here you go. Record it. And they post it and they're like, oh my God, it went viral. I'm like, yeah, everything is just feedback and a reflection for us. So I look at that all the time and I try to just get rooted back in, you know, what I want. And I think too, the last point on that one that just came to me, I feel like, I mean, entrepreneurial space outside of it too, I feel like a lot of us get addicted to the fact that there's a destination, right? And that's why we grind and that's why we push so hard. And once you've had an awakening in your life and you realize that the journey is the destination, it starts to shift things. Because I'm sure any entrepreneur will relate to this. You set a goal, you hit it immediately. You don't even give yourself a moment to celebrate your goal. You're like, not enough. What am I doing next? What am I doing next? Like, I just ran a marathon. I'm going to run another one right now. I'm like, whoa, like just breathe. And I used to do the same thing. And I still, I have to set my life up with containers around myself, like my wife, my team, my everything is designed to keep me in my lane, right? To not allow me to have those moments or to go crazy like that and to be like, right? And so I do that by hosting an event in person every 3 months and doing calls like this, you know, 3 to 5 times a week, because this is what I love and I thrive off it, but it keeps me out of here and it keeps me in here. And the more time I spend in here, in my heart, for those listening, I was touching my heart. The more time I spend there, the better things are for me. And so I think it's rooted on a couple levels for entrepreneurs or for business owners or for people in general. But the big one, you know, tends to be realizing what the emotions are underneath it and what the real come from is, not like, oh, I'm afraid of failure. Like, not really. Because if you do nothing else, you're going to just fail and you're doing nothing else, right? So go deeper, figure out what really that motivator is. And then the other thing is accepting that, like, this moment is all we have. Like, right now, like, I don't know, and like, kind of morbid, but that was my week. I don't know if I'm ever going to make it off this podcast call to kiss my kids and wife again. I literally have no clue. Like, something could happen, something catastrophic. I could have a health scare. I could have an aneurysm in my brain from my brain. I have no idea. This could be it. And so when I think about that, I think about that all the time to make sure that I'm playing out in those moments, like being present and living for the life that, like, I want to be known for and want to be living. And in that, it's a lot of like freeing power, because I'm like, no, this is the game. Like, my podcast with you is the most important thing in my life right now. Like, this is 100% of my focus and intention, and I'm giving it my all, because there is no finish line. I'm not going to do this podcast. It's going to lead to 100 emails. It's going to lead to $10 million. And I have no idea. All I have is this podcast. I'm like, this is my end result right now. And so knowing that, I started to get addicted to the game, right? Because that is my destination. And I'm only remembered for my last at bat. And currently, your podcast is my last at bat. And so I'm trying to hit a grand slam. And but yeah, that's what it is for me. And so I just recognize it. I acknowledge it a lot. And then I talk about it very openly, right? Like, I'm that guy that gives a keynote, throws my slides out the window and say, I'm going to do a user-generated keynote. Tell me what your problems are. And I'm like, first, let me start with my problems. This is what happens. And this is why I don't feel qualified to stand on this stage. And they're like, yeah, but you've done. I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm no different than you. We're not going to get in the comparison game, but I own it a lot. I talk about it a lot. And part of marketing for me is, as you and I both define marketing, is like putting human back in marketing. Well, you can't market or be in a relationship with a robot. And in order for a relationship to take place, both parties have to be willing to do the work and show up emotional, vulnerable, and authentic. And so I'm not going to sit back here and wait for everybody else to do it. I'm like, nope, I have to show up that way first if that's what I want to attract. And so that's how I break through my fear of success or my fear of failure or my fear of being loved or feeling good enough, right? There's so many entrepreneurs that I meet that literally won't launch their product because just the launch of their product proves their story wrong.
Yeah.
Like, my parents told me I would never make it. And I said, great, by when? And they're like, no. And I literally, if they are in my zone, I will sit them down with my team. And I'm like, you're not leaving until this is live. And I was like, even better, I won't let you leave till we have a sale. And they're like, and I'm like, nope, story gets to be proven wrong today.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's so great. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that one.
Yeah. I mean, you're very clearly passionate about that heart-centered connection and empathy. And I know that that comes into all the marketing you do and the process you have. So tell us a little bit, because you use the word transformational marketing, which is something that I use as well. So what does that mean to you, and what are the aspects of that that you work on?
The easiest way for me to summarize this, and the reason I use transformational marketing, is because marketing for me, my definition is that we show up and transform people's lives, whether they give us their credit card or not. And that is my definition of success. So I have 7 marketing laws that I abide by. I'm not going to share all of them with you guys, but that's one of them, is that everybody feels valuable whether they give you their credit card or not. And so that's the foundational piece of my marketing. And I believe that we have a moral obligation when we launch a business, start a business, or even put our name on something. We're like, hey, here's my idea, or this is what I want you to do. That we have to maintain that and see that all the way through until the very last person has achieved that goal. If not, we're perpetuating a cycle and setting people up to fail. Like, it doesn't do me any good to like post a video about like, hey, if you do X, Y, and Z, you'll get here in 12 months, and then you never hear from me again. And I didn't say anything about taking your credit card, but I have a moral obligation that if I say something or if I do something or if I post something, that I have to make sure that that's seen all the way through. And so the marketing law that we teach is that everybody feels valuable whether they give you their credit card or not. And so within that, I do say, you know, I help companies ethically scale by teaching you that relationship feed algorithms. Now, I happen to spend a lot of time on digital, but we do retail as well. But everything boils down to the customer and the customer journey, right? And a customer journey for me is not somebody went through your funnel, clicked on your four upsells that they should have never gotten in the first place, bought your product and never used it. My customer journey is before they even bought a product, we helped them achieve a goal. They were in relationship with our brand, aligned to our brand, knew that we could help them, were ready to be helped and said like, hey, now's the time. Then they come in, give us their credit card, and then we don't get off of them until they've achieved their goal. Not, hey, I'm going to give you 3 weeks of cooling off time before I hit you with my next upsell or hit you with my next offer. Like, no, like I'm guarding and protecting this relationship like it's my marriage. And I just committed at the altar that I would be committed to you and we would go on a date once a week for the rest of our life. So I'm going to go on a date with you once a week for the rest of our lives, whether you ever buy from me again or not. And so really, it's this novel concept, and I can't believe I get paid to do this. It's this really novel concept of actually helping our customers achieve the results we promise them, which equates to a lot more money. And that's what I spend all my time doing. So, of course, we have social media, we have paid media, we have email marketing, we have content marketing, you know, we have funnels, we have customer journeys, we have retail experiences, packaging, Amazon packaging, inserts. So what I do is I inject myself and a relationship at every single step of one of those things. And so it's really easy in most companies. So some companies just like crush on social media, but then you buy a product and you only hear from them via email once, says, here's your receipt. And then you only hear from them again when you have a sale. Right. And I was like, oh, massive opportunity. Yeah. Right. Because you just put your customers in the trap of everybody else. I tell my clients and I tell my business partners, the worst thing that you can do for a company is actually sell your product and have your customer not use it. Because you would be a lot better business if those people just didn't buy your product. I said, but you're creating an anti-marketing machine. Every time somebody buys your product, they get it in the mail and it goes right into their pantry or into their shelf or into their cabinet and they never use it. I was like, because you just made their story right. They have resentment. They spent money. They didn't achieve their goals. They were either weren't ready or they weren't prepped enough or held accountable enough to achieve that goal. And so what I know about business is that, especially in the info space and a lot of times in the physical product space in the health world, is people aren't paying for the product. They're paying for access and accountability. Because every one of those products has 25 competitors. And every one of those products had all that same information for free on the internet. They are paying with their credit card by saying, when I agree to give you this credit card, not only am I buying your product, but I expect you and I'm counting on you to hold me accountable by committing to you. It challenges me. And then you're going to hold me accountable and you're going to help me achieve these goals. And then we, you know, cricket them. We never show up for dinner. Yeah, yeah. We don't help them with their goals. And so,
that's right. Yeah.
You know, so for me, yeah, go ahead. No, I was going to say that marketing law for me is the most important one, right? And it wraps in with number 7 on my marketing law list, was that nobody gets left behind, right? That was for me in the Marine Corps. And that means that if a customer comes in and they refund, then it's not like giving your money back. I'm like, hey, here's your money and here's a 90-day plan to help you. And here's my number. If you need anything, call us if we can help, right? Like nobody gets left behind. The one person who saw the Facebook video ad that clicked and didn't comment, they don't get left behind either. We run a retargeting ad with a gift or into a Facebook group so I can nurture them. Like the whole thing is that we get to bring everybody home and we need to hold space for people as a business. And we need to make sure that they have the ability to be in a relationship with us regardless of the transaction. And so transformational marketing is quite frankly, giving a crap about your customer, not expecting a credit card transaction in return. That would be the easiest way to sum that up. And if you want a tangible example, I can give you one that actually got me a 53% lift on a company.
Yeah, so, well, we might jump onto that one in a moment. I was just
I'll pause on that one.
I was just going to comment that the key point for me in all of that is that marketing is actually a journey that you undertake with your client. So it's starting off with, you know, getting to know who they are. And what they need and how you might be able to help them. and then taking them on that journey. And when they buy your product or service, it's you're still marketing because they're looking for, as you said, they're looking for some sort of experience that goes along with the product or service. So that you want to make sure that they have that experience.
1,000%.
And then you continue that relationship. So I love the analogy earlier that you gave about dating.
Yes.
And then you talk about marriage. Once you're in marriage, you don't stop sending flowers. You don't stop listening to them. You don't stop you don't stop going on a date night. You don't stop other things that you do during dating, because otherwise the marriage breaks down, right?
Yep. And so what I think, and in that, that's such a powerful point, because where we see, and you probably see this all the time, where most companies stop is they stop once they get married.
Hmm.
That's where I start, because that's where things happen. Like, LTV, your lifetime value, is not dictated by the context of the relationship in the beginning. It's dictated by your commitment to the success of the relationship on the back end, right? Like, we've done this where we've just added nurture emails, like nothing more than value-based nurture emails that led back to blog posts. I just had one company, this was 2 months ago. Their returning customer rate was 8%. I added 30 value-based emails that all fed their other content and their other products. You didn't have to leave your inbox. I gave you the value in the email. And I said, and if you want to read more, you can click here to save it or reference it later. So we put 30 of those emails up over 90 days. The returning customer rate went from 8% to 63% in 60 days.
Mm.
So to give you a number, that's 200 to 300 units a day with an average order value of $48. And that number of returning customers went from 8% to 63%. So that's me being in integrity, because I can't share the number. So I gave you can do the math. You'll figure it out.
Yeah.
it basically tripled their net for the month just by adding those emails, because people just want to be in relationship. They want, hey, my husband's still thinking about me. Oh, my wife loves me. She texted me, right? It's like, hey, like, I know you bought this product 6 months ago, and you might still not be using it, but if you make this recipe, it'll make you feel good. And they're like, God, I haven't used that thing. I got to get back to the gym now. How did they know I haven't been using it? Right? And that's really where the value comes in. It's in that, like, it's almost that subconscious accountability that gives people that, like, North Star, right? Like, we have to remember too, like, and I remind my clients of this, our customers don't come to us because everything's working. Right? They're not like, I'm so happy today. I have the body of my dreams. Let me give you $250 for supplements and a 90-day workout program. That's not what's happening. Right? They're like, my life isn't working. Things aren't here. I've tried this before. It's never worked. Like, getting, like you said, getting really connected to who they are and what their wants and needs are, so that we can meet them where they are and take them where they need to go. But in that is where you realize that the value of what you offer has never been in your offer or the product. It's in the accountability of helping people prove that story wrong, or negating that pain point, or getting them one step closer to their destination. And that's gold, man. That's what this game is about, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. It just seems like common sense to me. I'm like, I mean, most of my marketing answers come from, would you be okay doing that in a grocery store? And they're like, no. I'm like, great, then don't do it online.
Yeah, well, common sense is unfortunately not all that common, I've come to the conclusion. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the understanding your client and their needs and so on comes back to, and having that relationship comes back to really building that deep understanding right up front. And I do a lot of work with my customers in building that understanding, but then also focusing in on some niche. And a lot of the times there's resistance to that, because I might be sacrificing some sort of customer out here that's totally outside that niche. So what's
that whole scarcity fear of success thought, right? Because here's the thing. What did Amazon launch first? Amazon was not an e-commerce company. Amazon was a book company, right? Nike launched one shoe. They didn't launch a clothing line. They didn't launch commercials. They didn't launch professional sports teams, right? Lululemon, yoga pants. Women's, not men's, women's. Yeah. It took years for men's to come, right? And so the thing is that a lot of it really, and what I found honestly, is the resistance to niching down or identifying your niche is actually the resistance to you identifying it as what you do. Because a lot of us don't want to look inward. Like, we don't want to see where we really are, or, and I can only speak for myself, right? So if this lands, but in order to like identify the niche of like, I'm going to go after moms with two kids that are 35 and plus that don't work, right? Like, in order for me to connect to that woman, I then have to look at me and be like, what is it that I can offer that mom? How am I showing up? What value do I add? And I have to turn the table around. And in that turning the table around is where I find people's the most resistance. It's not about niching down. It's about identifying who they are to serve that niche, because they'd rather have all of the vagueness of like, well, I help everybody and I do whatever. And I'm like, no. I need specifics so I can give you an award. I can't give you an award for being an awesome student. I need you to get straight A's or have perfect attendance or show up on time, right? Like, you don't get one for just showing up. So the specificity is really powerful. Now, I'm in one of those interesting situations where I was niche in the beginning, but I've gotten to a point in my career where I focus on foundational principles, which are agnostic of niche. And so I can meet companies. I've worked with chiropractors, plastic surgeons, e-commerce companies, retail companies in every room, like 400 different companies in the last 3 years, like every single one that you can imagine. But the only reason that I can do that is because I'm pulling them out of their own weeds and I'm working on foundational principles, right? And so those are what apply universally to every single niche or pillar within their company. And so I'm working on internally, right? So I use a lighthouse, which, by the way, this isn't here accidentally. For those of you that are listening, you can't see the obsessively large working lighthouse that's in my office behind me that is 6.5 feet tall, but he can.
Yeah.
And lighthouses are my analogy for business. And so when I look at lighthouses, there's four sections to the lighthouse. The bottom level, the foundation, is the why. And in that, you have two versions. You have your why and your company why. Your why is like to prove my kid's story wrong, to leave a legacy. The company why is so that every woman or every man feels like they matter, right? Above the why, you get to the what. And you've heard me say this a couple times. My what is I help companies ethically scale, right? Your what is you put the human back into marketing, right? Like I help put the human back into marketing, right? From there, we get to our how. Notice I didn't say who yet, our how. I do this by teaching people that relationships beat algorithms, that you respond to every comment that you do, right? This is the pedantic modality stuff, right? You do it by teaching them to get niche down into their business, to connect with their customers, to realize that they have to help them achieve their goal, not sell them another product, that marketing is in the nurturing on the back end, right? That's how you do it. Then the very top section is the who, and you'll notice the who is the light. Only when you have all of these things can you shine the light out to attract the right person back in. And the thing about a lighthouse is once you turn it on, you can never turn it off, because a lighthouse is on the corner of a peninsula and boats are going to see the light, but it's only the boats that need you that turn in when they need you. The rest of them still see you though. And it's important to be congruent and keep shining your light, because when a storm comes, they're all going to turn your way. And if the light's off, you can't help them, right? It's not jumping in the water to convince the wrong boat to come to the dock, who still has 7 days of fuel left and plenty of fish to catch, right? It's shining light, being like, I see you. And they're like, I see you. And then when they're ready, I'm letting them come in, right? So the lighthouse is what I use because it's so powerful. And it's all my branding. I built everything around it because it's my constant reminder that if this, my lighthouse is like, I do this to create a legacy for my kids and I teach companies how to ethically scale by teaching them relationship feed algorithms, and I'll help anybody as long as they have two things. They own a business and they care about their customers. That's my avatar. Like, that's about as anti-niche as you get, right? Even though you'd be surprised. It's actually a pretty small niche. Because I get a lot of, I want to own a business or I just want money, right? That eliminates about 70% of the people that come to me. Just that one question. And so I can literally ask myself every day, is this podcast right now helping me shine light? Yeah. Because there's plenty of people that are listening that care about their customers and have a business, right? And so I can say that this is authentically congruent and aligned with what I do. And if it doesn't fit in there, I don't do it, right? And so it's just, I try to give myself these reminders and these accountability things in these containers every day so that I can do this and that I can help teach this, right? And I can empower you and empower other people, because you have the game. You have the game nailed. I've read probably 25 of your emails. I've been on your website. I've been through your acquisition funnel, your customer journey map, like all of it. I just remember the big imagery. And I was like, this is the most custom built value added site I've ever seen. And all I gave him was my email. And I was like, this guy gets it. And I went through it all. And I went through all the emails and I did it. And I'm like, awesome. And then of course, there's always holes because none of us can ever see them, right? So there's ways that we can open-ended question those emails so we get open-ended responses. We can do list segmentation and subsequences. There's so many things that we can do. But it started with you getting really, really clear and then creating all of that. And all of it's congruent because everything that you do helps put human back in marketing.
Hmm.
Right. Yeah. So like everything is aligned and the results show. So that was, I don't even remember the question.
Yeah.
That's my authenticity.
I love the lighthouse analogy. So we were away it was Father's Day here in Australia last weekend, and we were away with my dad and with my brother-in-law and my daughter and niece and whole family really got together, and we went for a couple of morning walks, and I kept being drawn out to this lighthouse on the peninsula. It was fascinating.
Foreshadowing. Just foreshadowing.
So I love the analogy. All right. Now, this is absolutely fascinating. I'm just watching the time here. We've gone on longer than I normally do. So I think
this happens. We'll be here all day if you let me keep going.
Yeah. Well, I think we might have to do another one on marketing more specifically.
Can I solve two things real quick, and they won't take long? So number one, open loops for everybody wondering. The official name for them is called the Zeigarnik effect. And there's one happening in my brain right now because I promised you I'd tell you how I lifted that one company, and it'll only take me a minute. So, the one way that you can put these marketing laws into play, the easiest place in any company is their cart abandonment sequences, right? I can't stand another insulting email that says, hey, you forgot something. First, nobody ever forgets to spend money. Let me just throw that out there right now. Yeah. What they're really telling you is that you haven't done a good enough job courting me or helping me feel safe to make a transaction. And I see people do this all the time. They're like, oh my God, we put these cart abandonment emails up. There's three of them. We recovered 8% of sales. And I was like, but you have to remember that if I took the 100 people that saw it and I asked of them how many of you had a positive experience, only 8 hands go up. If I ask how many had a negative experience, 92 hands go up. The average person gives 8 to 10 brand recommendations or non-recommendations in a 60-second conversation, well being part of the 86% of people that still primarily market through word of mouth. And so here's a better option. Let's say you sell a supplement. And this, I actually did this at a company. You sell a supplement that helps people lose weight. Hypothetical example. If they come to buy a supplement to help them lose weight and you're like, hey, you forgot to buy the supplement to help you lose weight, they're not going to buy. But if you're like, hey, I realize that the only resource on this planet that I can't give back to you is time. And for whatever reason, you chose to give me 15 minutes of it today. And I just wanted to say thank you. So I know you were interested in product X, which would help you with Y. So rather than try to sell you the product or convince you, I would love to give you my 30-day meal plan and workbook that will help you achieve boom and boom below for free. And of course, if you have any questions, you can respond to this email or you can join our Facebook group right here. And tomorrow, I'm going to be sharing my favorite recipe from that book. The next day, I know you didn't make the recipe yet. Hey, have you checked out page 13 yet? I told you that one recipe alone. If you do nothing else but make that one recipe every day for the next 30 days with that green juice, that it'll absolutely transform your life, right? And so I'd love for you to make the recipe and then post it and use the hashtag whatever so I can tag you, I can repost it, and I can show you some love, right? Social proof, wins, full ecosystem. And then the third day, and I'm like, and don't worry, tomorrow I have a question for you. Oh, no, email two, I said, I have a question for you. I said, after you make this recipe, I would love to know if you could just respond and let me know what was missing for you. You know, like as you went through this funnel, like I know you were interested in this. And so for me, I do a value exchange first. I have to earn the right for you to answer my question. Yeah. I don't just get you to go on a date with me. Like it's not an immediate yes. Consent is still a thing in this world. And and so there's so many digs in that one. But so I basically give you the guide. I give you the value because I only win if you achieve your goal. It doesn't matter if you achieve your goal with my supplement or without it. I only win if you achieve your goal. And then I was like, I made a deposit. Hey, let me ask. You respond. You'd be shocked at the amount of responses I get. Normally 10 to 15 out of 100 respond. And they tell you everything. And I mean everything. And so then I take all of those responses and I copy and paste them into email 3. And I'm like, I'm sorry. And I was like, I have to be honest with you. I asked that question and I never knew that these were the answers that I got. And I'm going to be really frank. I didn't cover any of these on my sales pages, in my emails, in my ads. I didn't even know that these were problems. And I was like, so here they are. Question one, answer one. Question two, answer two. Question three, answer three. And I was like, and this is the last time you're going to hear about this. But just know that whenever you're ready or you want our help, just simply hit reply to this email or call us and we'll be here to support you. No link to the website, no link back to the PDP page. Best one I ever recovered was 43% of card abandonments, which added about $1.35 million to that monthly bottom line by getting rid of the "hey, you forgot something" coupon codes. So yeah, that is a tangible example.
Yeah, that's a really great example, and it's it is very personalized and very human and very respectful. Because one of the ones, you know, "you forgot something" to me is disrespectful, and the other one. The other one that I find really disrespectful are the upsells. So when you make a purchase, then you land on an upsell page, and at the bottom there's this massive big yes button, you know, buy, a tiny little text that says, "no, I'm not interested in improving myself," or "no, I'm not interested in being a better person. I'm going to stay the lousy person I am."
You know what I mean? I love it. There's really no better way to shoot yourself in the foot in a company is you get somebody to spend you money, and then you immediately convince them that what they paid for wasn't the solution, and they're questioning their first purchase too. I give it the grocery store test. I tell people, I actually did this in a keynote, and I said, "how many of you went into a grocery store, would go into a grocery store, buy a dozen eggs, and take two steps, and they're like, 'oh, wait, do you want to add another dozen for only $2 more?'" I'm like, "how many of you would get arrested for assault?" And literally, like, every hand went up, right? Yeah, they're like, "never." And I was like, "even better, you push them out of the way," and they're like, "wait, we'll give you four dozen for half the price." I'm like, "not only did you not hear me, I only needed a dozen. That's wasteful. Now you're convincing me and you're desperate because you're chasing me around." And I'm like, "how many of you get arrested at this point?" Everybody's hand goes up. And I said, "great. Now, how many of you are actively doing this in your business?" And like all of the hands went up. And I said, "how many are you going to keep doing it?" And like everybody just went, whoosh. And it's really powerful though, because when we think about it, I can't believe this. Like, people ask me questions all the time. And the first thing I'll ask them, like, "well, would you do it in a brick and mortar business?" And they're like, "no." And they pay me for that answer. And I'm like, let's just add that into your ethos, right? Like, would I do this if I worked at a store? Same example on the other side. How many stores would be in business if every time a customer walked in the door, they ignored them and didn't ask them any questions or engage with them or answer their questions? None of them. But yet we let people email us and post on our social every day and we never respond to them. And then we expect them to be like, "yeah, here's my wallet. Let me give you a subscription for $129 a month, auto-billed without you telling me for the next 12 months and have me be happy about it." So we could do an entire episode on just all the broken stuff in marketing, we might have to trigger for somewhere else and a bottle of wine so I get really honest about it. But I think that's
one of my favorite ones that I brought this up a number of times, so the listener will be familiar with this one, is the quest for new customers, and the telcos and the internet service providers and the electricity companies and gas companies are probably good at this too. But so they put out this offer and they send out the offer, but they send it to the existing customers as well, and they say, I've had it from my website hosting company this week, 25%. So actually, for 25%, you can have the next year of hosting for free. And I bet if I then ask them and I say, "well, I've been a customer of yours for 10 years, I've got three hosting accounts, can I have my next year for 25% on those three hosting accounts?" They'll say, "no, it's only for new customers." And that really gets up my nose. I say, "well, so you're not taking care of existing customers, you're just interested in people you don't have a relationship with yet and people who haven't shown you loyalty over 10 years and been your customers for 10 years, you're prepared to look after them better."
Totally. It actually just happened to me. I was actually paying for internet service. I pay for really fast internet. I was paying for like 250 megs upload and download. I was paying $180 a month. I called them because I needed more because my team works out of my house, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, "I want a gig a gig." And they're like, "okay, well, the gig a gig is only $99 a month. But if we add it to your plan, then it's going to go up." I'm like, "wait. It's three times as fast and people are paying less than me." And they're like, "yeah." I'm like, "cancel my account." Yeah. And they're like, "well," I'm like, "if you can't give it to me, cancel my account because I'm going to sign up for a new one tomorrow." And like, "well, you can't." I was like, no. I have four people that live in my house. They each have their own name and their own social security number. So I'm like, "my kids will have an account. My wife will have an account. I'm getting it." And then they finally were like, "well, you know what, Mr. Bryant, we can honor that price for you." And I was like, "great." And I was like, "so should we have a conversation about the fact that I've been overpaying for the last 9 months and you didn't think it was okay to like have a moral conversation about it?" So yeah, it happens all the time. not good business, which is why they're in the business of chasing customers and doing what they're doing. So that's a deep one. It's a deep one.
All right. Well, as I say, we've been going for quite some time, so I think it's a good point to move on to the innovation round, which is designed our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field. And we've got five questions, and hopefully we'll get some really snappy answers from you and something really insightful that'll inspire people to go and do something awesome today. So what do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Invest more time and money and resources into yourself. The fastest way to innovate is to learn how to trust yourself more and be okay and unapologetically authentic with who you are.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I think that was coming through pretty clearly in all the conversation today. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new products or new ideas?
I've asked my customers what they want. And then I very intently listen both to what they tell me they want and what they're telling me underneath the surface that they need.
Yeah.
And so here's a secret. Anger, sadness, frustration, those are all secondary emotions. There's a primary emotion underneath it, right? So if somebody is like, I really need this product because I want to lose 35 pounds, realize that 35 pounds is step one, but then I don't want to end up like my mother is step two, and I've tried this before and it's never worked is step three, and then I don't love myself is step four. And so if you can really listen to your customers and be connected to who you are and see or feel or hear the layers that are underneath it, you'll never need to innovate again. You just get to listen and then create what people tell you.
Yeah, yeah, that's great advice. And I love doing the five whys exercise in those listening exercises to say, well, why do you want to lose 35 pounds? You know, yep.
Chinese why system. I think I've done like 30 with people. Like, why? And they're like, if you ask me again, I'm like, okay, I think we got it. Like, I'm good. We're good.
Yeah. All right. Now, do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
Yes, my brain. And I say that because I've never seen a community of people more committed to destroying the one resource that makes us good at what we do. The lack of sleep, the overindulgence in caffeine, stimulants, blah, 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 Red Bulls, energy drinks, not eating enough, fasting, and like, no. You cannot put crap in the engine of a race car and expect it to win, and your brain and your body are your race car. And you are on the track with no pit stops 24/7 as an entrepreneur. And so the number one tool that you have is your body, your brain, and your beingness. And the best thing that you can do is love it.
That's great advice. And of course, everything's connected. It's all part of one system, isn't it?
1,000%. And like, I mean, here's a newsflash. Incongruencies don't work in business. So if you run a health and supplement company and you portray on social media that you're doing those things, but you're not really, nobody's going to buy from you because they can feel the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Okay, now what's the best way to keep a client on track?
The best way to keep a client on track to ensure that they are achieving their desired results. And if their desired results are, let's call them a moonshot, then having really authentic, honest conversations with those clients, which for me is framed on the front end. You're like, my clients stay on track because on day one, I'm like, let's have a real conversation. Like, what is it that we really want? Like, we don't want $2 billion of money because you don't need more than $100 million, right? So what is that and why is that a goal? And getting really, really honest and upfront in the beginning. And then once you are honest and upfront, you're standing on solid ground. Just like if you were dating somebody, good luck committing to a marriage where somebody's been lying to you the whole time. You're going to end up divorced, right? So bringing that like authenticity and transparency to the front of the relationship, and then ensuring that you maintain those containers and that you understand that clients aren't paying for the answers. They're paying for the accountability and the access. And so keep that in your lane. And honestly, for me, I hate when I say "and honestly" because it implies that everything else I'm saying is a lie. I'm always honest, but I'm working on my language patterns. Forgive me. When I really think about that answer for me, how do I keep my clients successful? It's by me staying in my integrity with like what I say. So if I say I'm going to be on a call at 12, I get on at 12, not 12:02, not 12:04. If I say we're going to be this long, it's this long. If I say it's going to be an hour, I end the call at an hour. And I'm like, hey, I realize that we went over because of me, but I made a commitment to end this call at an hour so we can reschedule. I said, but I have to end this call to maintain my integrity for myself. And you know what? The deep wisdom in that one, the answer I just got, is the best way to ensure or maintain a client's success is to have integrity in everything that you're doing.
Great. Yeah. Well, that's wonderful advice. And I'm aware that we've gone a little bit over time here.
Oh, so. No. I had 4 hours open for this because I know who I am. I just didn't prep you for that.
Yeah. All right. Okay. That's good. All right. So what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Be your unapologetically authentic self. Because pretending or innovating to be different is not sustainable, and you will always, always crash. So be 100% your unapologetically, my branding, like I root this into everything I do. Like I had no intention of saying that. This is the box that my mastermind members get when they come to an event. It says clearing the way to your unapologetically authentic self.
Self. Yeah.
Hey, there's a lighthouse too.
And a lighthouse. Yeah. I was just going to say.
Little shameless plug on the most expensive cardboard box I've ever bought in my life.
Beautiful. Looks fabulous.
It's amazing.
All right. Yeah. So, George, this has been absolutely fantastic. I really appreciate you spending time with us today and being your truly unapologetically authentic self with us. Where can people reach out and find out more about you and maybe even get in touch and begin that human engagement?
Yeah, so really appreciate the opportunity. Two best places, and I'm going to give you a container for this. That's actually how I do this. So first, I have a Facebook group, which my team's getting ready to kind of reactivate. But the URL is really easy. It's mindofgeorge.com. I've tried to think of the best way, and it's just my mind musings. So mindofgeorge.com goes to that Facebook group. And then that's the best place to find me. So once you join that group, you'll see my team's in there and I'm in there. And then specifically, if there's anybody that's listening or watching this that has a very specific marketing question or a need, or you want to connect, you know who I am, any of that stuff, I'm going to give you my personal email address right now. And I'm going to make one request. And this is how you hold people accountable and you put a container on it. So I'm going to give you my personal email. He can put it in the show notes. And you are only allowed to email me under one circumstance, that in the actual subject line, you put the podcast episode and name of the show for this podcast, and then write me your email with your question and make sure it's clear that I can answer it. I'll do a video response. I'll write something. I'll send you a resource. I'll do anything that I can. If it does not have the specific subject line of, how do you title your shows? This is what, episode 194?
InnovaBuzz episode. Let me see.
Roughly.
I haven't written
it. I put you on the spot.
Down.
We'll figure it out.
230 something.
230 something, yeah. Right? So subject line, it's
InnovaBuzz.
InnovaBuzz episode 200 whatever, and then your subject line. As long as the email has that in the subject line, I will personally read it and respond to every single one of them. And so my personal email address is George, George, at gbmasterminds.com. That is my personal email. If I could show you my screen, I will open it on my phone for you.
Yeah.
It is George at GB, so George Bryant, gbmasterminds.com, all one word. And of course, you can put it in the show notes. So just make sure you send me an email with a question, or I mean, you can say, there's no question, just read. I'll read that too. Specific subject line, name of the show. And I'm horrible at pronunciation. InnovaBuzz, and then episode, whatever the number is, and then your subject line and the question. And if it does not have that, I will delete the email. Just so everybody knows, because if you don't care enough about me to listen specifically to give me 3 seconds to write the subject line so I can find it, then it's going to be hard for me to invest all that time into reading and responding to your email.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, George. That's very generous and very clear instructions. So we'll have those links in the show notes and the instructions as well.
And then all of you, if you do email me, you have to tell me what your favorite takeaway from this podcast has been.
Yes.
Because I need to be able to tell him how amazing, not my episode, any episode. Like, you need to make sure you've listened to at least like 10 episodes. Like, go do that thing now. You got to earn the right to ask that question. But no, I'm excited. Great. And anything I can do to support you or anybody else, as always, I'm here.
Fantastic. Thanks, George.
Of course.
What's the number one piece of advice you'd like to leave the listener today to for anybody that wants to be a leader in their field and innovation?
Yeah, the number one piece of advice is at the end of the day, when this whole thing is over, the only thing that you're left with is your name. So ensure that every time somebody comes into contact with you, they feel better than when they left.
Hmm. That's great. That's very authentic and consistent and congruent with human marketing.
Yeah.
Love it. And
you know,
transformation.
I try.
Transformation. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Now, finally, who would you like me to interview or have a conversation with on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why?
Ooh, I think Mike Michalowicz would be my recommendation.
Oh, we just published Mike Michalowicz.
Did you? I missed that. Yeah. Okay, so Mike, so then I actually have another gentleman for you.
I think we published it yesterday as we're recording this, yeah.
I have another gentleman for you. His name is Nick Nanton. He's a really good friend of mine. He's responsible. I think he has 16 Emmys. He's a documentary film producer on Things That Matter. And the only way that his movies reach the masses is through human marketing. And he does some amazing, profound things. And so his name is Nick Nanton. And I highly recommend everybody check him out. He, you know that movie Rudy, like the football movie?
Mm-hmm.
So there's an Amazon documentary called Rudy that just came out on The Real Rudy. So Nick shot and produced and directed that whole thing. And he has a lot of movies like that. And he's about people and having a massive impact. And he lives this way. So Nick Nanton would be who I would recommend.
Great. All right. Well, we'll get an introduction to Nick from you and see if we can bring him on the show and have a conversation with him. All right. Well, George, I've really enjoyed this conversation. So thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights so generously with us today. And I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch. And maybe we'll have that conversation on specifically on marketing and taking
I have
care
a feeling there's another one in the pipeline somewhere. We'll make it happen, but it was my absolute pleasure. Thank you for opening up your house to me and allowing me to be in. And like I said, my absolute pleasure, and keep up the great work. So thank you.
Thanks, George.
Wow. I hope you enjoyed that inspiring and engaging conversation with George, and certainly took something away from this episode. I love the way he's really consistent and congruent in everything he said today and all he does around relationships in business. And of course, I love his lighthouse metaphor. I'm really curious to know what you took away from George's episode today. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/George Bryant. That is GEORGEBRYANT. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/George Bryant. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with George there, as well as links to the Relationships Beat Algorithms Facebook group and several of his podcast interviews where he shares more about his backstory. To get in touch with George via email, use the subject line InnovaBuzz episode 226. That way, he'll answer your questions and engage in a conversation with you. George suggested that we interview Nick Nanton, documentary film producer, and Steve Sims, author of Blue Fishing, The Art of Making Things Happen, on future InnovaBuzz podcasts. So Nick and Steve, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of George Bryant. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without giving away your email. In just 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity about your ideal client, what drives them and what motivates them, and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery or help with podcast production, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we'll set up a quick call just to get to know one another. Tune in again next week where we've got more fantastic guests lined up on the InnovaBuzz podcast, including Corey Wassell of Verse Wealth and Brad Smith of Simplecast. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.